14 of them placed around the field, each one with benches attached on either side, made from wooden planks. There were adults, children, AFs, dogs sitting at the tables, or running, walking, and standing around them. Just beyond the tables was the waterfall. It was larger and fiercer than the one I'd seen in the magazine, filling 8 boxes just by itself. I looked for the sun, but couldn't see him in the gray sky. "We'll sit here," the mother said. "Go on, sit down. Wait for me. I need coffee." I watched her walk to a hut made of the same rough wood some 20 paces away. It had an open counter at the front so that it could function as a store, and passers-by were now standing in line there. I was glad of the chance to sit down and orient myself, and as I waited at the rough table for the mother to return, I found the surroundings settling into order. The waterfall no longer took up so many boxes, and I watched children and their AFs passing easily from one box to another with barely any interruption. Although none of them looked my way with any interest, and each seemed very focused on their child, I felt pleased to be in the presence once more of other AFs, and for a moment watched them with happiness, following one then another with my gaze. Then the mother returned and sat down in front of me, and I turned to face her fully, the waterfall moving fiercely behind her. Her coffee was in a paper cup, and she raised it to her mouth. I remembered what Josie had said about sitting close to the waterfall, how your back could get wet without your noticing, and I wondered about mentioning this to the mother. But something in her manner told me she didn't wish me to speak just yet. She was gazing straight at my face, the way she'd done from the sidewalk when Rosa and I had been in the window. She drank coffee, all the time looking at me, till I found the mother's face filled 6 boxes by itself, her narrowed eyes recurring in 3 of them, each time at a different angle. She said finally, "So how do you like it here?"
"It's wonderful."
"So now you've seen a real waterfall. I'm grateful you brought me here." "That's odd. I was just thinking you didn't look so happy. I don't see your usual smile."
"I apologize. I didn't mean to seem ungrateful. I'm very pleased to see the waterfall, but perhaps also regretful Josie couldn't be with us."
"I am too. I feel bad about it." Then she said, "But I don't feel quite so bad because you're here."
"Thank you."
Maybe Melania was right. Maybe Josie would have been fine. I said nothing. The mother sipped her coffee and continued to look at me. "What did Josie tell you about this place?"
"She said it was beautiful, and she'd always enjoyed very much her trips here with you."
"That's what she said? And did she tell you how we always came here with Sal? How much Sal loved it here?"
"Josie did mention her sister."
Then, I added,
"I saw Josie's sister in the photograph."
The mother stared so intensely at me that I thought I'd made an error. But then she said, "I think I know the one you mean. The one with the 3 of us sitting over there. I remember Melania taking it. We were over at that bench right there. Me, Sal, Josie." "Something wrong, Clara?"
"I was very sad to hear Sal passed away."
"Sad puts it pretty well."
"I'm sorry. Perhaps I shouldn't have."
"It's okay. It's a while now since she left us. Shame you didn't meet Sal. Different from Josie. Josie just says what she thinks. Doesn't care if she says the wrong thing. That gets irritating sometimes, but I love her for it. Sal wasn't like that. Sal would have to think everything through before she came out with something. You know? She was more sensitive. Maybe didn't handle being sick so well as Josie's doing."
"I wonder why Sal passed away?"
The mother's eyes changed and something cruel appeared around her mouth.
What kind of a question is that? I'm sorry. I was merely curious to know. It's not your business to be curious. I'm very sorry.
What's it to you? It happened, that's all.
Then after a long moment, the mother's face softened. I think it was right we didn't bring Josie today, she said. She wasn't well. But now we're sitting here like this, I do miss her. She looked around, turning to look at the waterfall. Then she turned back and her gaze went past me, to the passers-by, the dogs and AFs.
Okay, Clara. Since Josie isn't here, I want you to be Josie. Just for a little while, since we're up here.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
You did it for me once before, the day we got you from the store. You haven't forgotten, have you?
I remember, of course.
I mean, you haven't forgotten how to do it. Walk like Josie?
I will be able to walk in her manner. In fact, now I know her better and have seen her in more situations, I'll be able to give a more sophisticated imitation. However
what?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean however. The mother looked at me, then said,
Good. But I wasn't going to ask you to do that walk anyway. We're sitting here, the two of us, a nice spot, a nice day, and I'd been looking forward to having Josie here. So I'm asking you, Clara. You're smart. If she were sitting here instead of you right now, how would she sit? I don't think she'd sit the way you're sitting.
No. Josie would be more like this.
The mother leaned closer over the tabletop and her eyes narrowed till her face filled 8 boxes, leaving only the peripheral boxes for the waterfall. And for a moment, it felt to me her expression varied between one box and the next. In one, for instance, her eyes were laughing cruelly, but in the next, they were filled with sadness. The sounds of the waterfall, the children and the dogs all faded to a hush to make way for whatever the mother was about to say.
That's good. That's very good.
But now I want you to move. Do something. Don't stop being Josie. Let me see you move a little.
I smiled, in the way Josie would, settling into a slouching, informal posture.
That's good. Now say something. Let me hear you speak.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure.
No, that's Clara, I want Josie.
Hi, Mom, Josie here.
Good, more, come on.
Hi, Mom. Nothing to worry about, right? I got here and I'm fine.
The mother leaned even further across the table, and I could see joy, fear, sadness, laughter in the boxes. Because everything else had gone silent, I could hear her repeating under her breath, That's good, that's good, that's good.
I told you I'd be fine, I said. Melania was right. Nothing wrong with me. A little tired, that's all.
I'm sorry, Josie, the mother said. I'm sorry I didn't bring you here today.
That's okay. I know you were worried for me. I'm okay.
I wish you were here, but you're not. I wish I could stop you getting sick.
Don't worry, Mom. I'm going to be fine.
How can you say that? What do you know about it? You're just a kid. A kid who loves life and believes everything can be fixed. What do you know about it?
It's okay, Mom. Don't worry. I'll get well soon. I know how it'll happen, too.
What? What are you saying? You think you know more than the doctors? More than I do? Your sister made promises, too, but she couldn't keep them. Don't you do the same.
But, Mom, Sal was sick with something different. I'm going to get well.
Okay, Josie. So tell me how you'll get well.
There's special help coming. Something no one's thought of yet. Then I'll be well again.
What is this? Who's this talking? Now, in box after box,
I could see the cheekbones of the mother's face very pronounced beneath her skin.
Really, Mom, I'm going to be fine. That's enough, enough!
The mother stood up and walked away. I could then see the waterfall again and its noise, as well as that of the people behind me, returned louder than ever. The mother stopped near the wooden rail, marking where the ground finished and the waterfall began. I could see the mist hanging before her, and I thought she would become wet in moments, but she continued standing with her back to me. Then at last she turned and waved.
Clara, come on over here. Come and take a look.
I got up from the bench and went to her. She'd called me Clara, so I knew I shouldn't attempt any more to imitate Josie. She gestured for me to come closer still.
See? Take a look. You've never seen a waterfall before, so take a look. What do you think?
It's wonderful. Much more impressive than in the magazine.
Something special, right? I'm glad you're seeing it. Now let's get back. I'm concerned about Josie.
The mother didn't speak for the entire way back down to the car. She walked quickly, always at least 4 paces ahead, and I had to take care not to make errors on the steep downhill path. As we passed the spot where we'd seen the bull, I looked over the field right into the distance, but the terrible creature was now nowhere to be seen, and I wondered if it had been taken back down into the ground. When we reached the car, I began to get into my usual seat, but the mother said,
"Travel in the front. You'll see better."
So I got in beside her, and it was like the difference between mid-store and the window. We descended across the fields, the sun visible between clouds, and I observed how the tall trees on the horizon gathered in tight groups of 7 or 8, even though all around them there was emptiness. The car followed a long, thin line across the land, and I saw that what at first had appeared to be part of a distant field's pattern was in fact sheep. We passed one field containing more than 40 such creatures, and although we were moving very fast, I was able to see that each one of them was filled with kindness, the exact opposite of the terrible bull from earlier. My gaze fell in particular on 4 sheep that looked even more gentle than the others. They'd arranged themselves on the grass in a neat row, one after the other, as though proceeding on a journey. But I could tell, even though we were passing quickly, that they were in fact standing quite still, aside from the small movements of their mouths as they ate the grass.
I'm grateful to you, Clara. Having you with me made it not so bad.
I'm so glad.
Maybe sometimes we'll do the same again, if Josie's too sick to come out.
When I said nothing, she said, "You don't mind, do you, Clara? If we do something like this again?"
"No, not at all, if Josie isn't able to come."
"You know what? I think it's best we say nothing to Josie about this. Nothing about what you were doing up there, imitating her. She might take it the wrong way." Then after another moment, she asked, "So we're agreed? Nothing to Josie about that."
"As you wish."
I could now see the metal box's village in the distance again, this time to our right. I thought she might say something more about it, or about the father, but she continued to drive in silence. And then the metal box's village had disappeared. Only then did she say, quite suddenly,
"Kids can be hurtful sometimes. They believe if you happen to be an adult, nothing can possibly hurt you.
Still, she's grown up some since you've been around. She's become more considerate."
"I'm glad."
"It's been noticeable. She's definitely more mindful of others these days." I could see a tree with a trunk that was in fact 3 thin trunks entwined together to look like a single one. I observed it carefully as we passed, turning in my seat to see it for longer.
"What you were saying earlier," the mother said,
"about her getting well? Some special kind of help coming along? You were just talking, right?"
You must excuse me. I know that you, the doctor, and Melania housekeeper have all considered very carefully Josie's condition. It's very concerning. Even so, I'm hoping soon she'll get better. Is that merely hoping? Or is this something more solid you're expecting? Something the rest of us haven't seen? I suppose it's merely a hope, but a real one. I believe Josie will soon become better. The mother didn't speak for several moments after that, her eyes staring through the windshield with an expression so distant, I wondered if she could see the road before us. Then she said quietly, "You're an intelligent AF. Maybe you can see things the rest of us can't. Maybe you're right to be hopeful. Maybe you're right." When we got back to the house, Josie wasn't in the kitchen or the open plan. The mother and Melania housekeeper stood in the doorway of the kitchen and talked in low voices, and I could tell Melania housekeeper was reporting that Josie had been fine in our absence. The mother kept nodding, then walked across the hall to the bottom of the stairs and called up to Josie. When Josie called back with a single okay, the mother remained not moving at the foot of the stairs for some time. Then she shrugged and went off towards the open plan. I was now alone in the hall, so went up the stairs to Josie. She was sitting on the rug, her back against the bed, her knees drawn up to rest a sketch pad against them. She was concentrating on what she was drawing with her pencil, and so didn't look up when I greeted her. Scattered around her were several other sheets torn from the sketch pad, some abandoned after a few quick lines, others densely filled. "I'm so glad Josie's been well," I said. "Yeah, I'm okay." She didn't look up from her sketching. "So how was the trip?" "It was marvelous. Such a pity Josie couldn't come." "Yeah, that was too bad. Did you check out the waterfall?" "Yes, it was wonderful." "Mom enjoy herself?" "I believe so. Of course she very much missed having Josie there." At last she looked my way, glancing quickly over the top of her sketch pad. And I saw in her eyes an expression I'd never seen before. And I remembered again the voice at the interaction meeting, asking Josie why she hadn't chosen a B3, and her replying with a laugh, "Now I'm starting to think I should have." Then her gaze fell away from me, and she began to draw again. For a long time, I remained standing at the spot where I'd first entered the room. Eventually, I said, "I'm very sorry if I did something to upset Josie." "Didn't upset me. What makes you think that?" "So we're still good friends?" "You're my AF, so we must be good friends, right?" But there was no smile in her voice. It was clear she wished to be alone to get on with her sketching. So I left the room to stand outside on the landing. Part 3. I hoped the shadows of the Morgan's Falls trip might be gone by the next morning, but I was disappointed, and Josie's cold manner continued for a long time afterwards. Even more puzzling was the change Morgan's Falls made to the mother's manner. I'd believed the trip had gone well, and that there would now be a warmer atmosphere between us. But the mother, just like Josie, became more distant. And if she encountered me in the hall or on the landing, she'd no longer greet me in the way she'd done before. Naturally, then, in the days that followed, I thought often about why the interaction meeting should cast no shadows at all, but Morgan's Falls, despite my complying with Josie's and the mother's wishes, had produced such consequences. Again, the possibility came into my mind that my limitations, in comparison to a B3's, had somehow made themselves obvious that day, causing both Josie and the mother to regret the choice they'd made. If this were so, I knew my best course was to work harder than ever to be a good AF to Josie until the shadows receded. At the same time, what was becoming clear to me was the extent to which humans, in their wish to escape loneliness, made maneuvers that were very complex and hard to fathom. And I saw it was possible that the consequences of Morgan's falls had at no stage been within my control. As things turned out, however, I had little time to dwell on the Morgan's Falls shadows, because several days after the outing, Josie's health collapsed. She became too weak to go down in the mornings to the mother's quick coffee. So instead, the mother would come up to the bedroom and stand over Josie's sleeping figure, her back remaining very straight even as she sipped her coffee and looked down at the bed. Once the mother left for the day, Melania housekeeper would take over, moving the easy chair close to the bed and sitting with her oblong on her lap, eyes moving back and forth between the screen and the sleeping Josie. And it was on one such morning, as I was standing just inside the bedroom door in readiness to help, that Melania housekeeper turned and said,
AF, you behind me all the time. Creep me out. Go outdoors.
She had said, outdoors. I turned to the door before asking quietly, Excuse me, housekeeper. Do you mean outside the house?
Outside room, outside house, who care? Come back quick if I send signal.
I had never before gone into the outdoors on my own, but it was clear that as far as Melania housekeeper was concerned, there was no reason why I shouldn't do so. I went carefully down the staircase, excitement entering my mind despite the worries concerning Josie. When I stepped out onto the loose stones, the sun was high, but seemed weary. I was unsure about closing the house door behind me, but in the end, since there were no passers-by, and I didn't wish to disturb Josie by sounding the door chime on my return, I pulled the door nearly closed without engaging the lock mechanism. Then I stepped further into the outdoors. To my left, I could see the grass mound where I'd met Rick flying his birds. Beyond the mound was the road along which the mother left each morning, where I myself had traveled to Morgan's Falls. But I turned away from these sights and walked in the opposite direction, crossing the loose stones to where I had a clear view of the fields behind the house. The sky was pale and large. Because the fields rose gradually into the distance, Mr. McBain's barn was still visible despite my no longer having the benefit of the rear window's height. The blades of grass were easier to distinguish than from the bedroom. But the main change was that I could now see Rick's house rising out of the grass. I realized that if the rear window had been positioned just a little more to the left, Rick's house would have been visible also from the bedroom. But I didn't consider Rick's house, because my mind had become filled once more with the Josie worries, and specifically the question of why the son hadn't yet sent his special help, as he'd done for Beggarman and his dog. I'd first expected the son to help Josie in the days when she'd become weak before Morgan's Falls. I'd then accepted that he'd perhaps been correct at that point to wait. But now, with Josie so much weaker, and so many things concerning her future in uncertainty, it was puzzling why he continued to delay. I'd already given much thought to this matter, but now I was outside on my own. The field so close and the sun high above me, I was able to bring several speculations together. I could understand that for all his kindness, the son was very busy, that there were many people besides Josie who required his attention, that even the son could be expected to miss individual cases like Josie, especially if she appeared well looked after by a mother, a housekeeper, and an AF. The idea came into my mind, then, that for her to receive the son's special help, it might be necessary to draw his attention to Josie's situation in some particular and noticeable way. I walked on the soft earth till I was beside the fence to the first field, and a wooden gate that resembled a picture frame. The gate could be opened simply by raising the loop of cord hung over its post, and I saw I could then move on into the field unimpeded. The grass in the field looked very tall, and yet Josie and Rick, while still small children,
had managed to walk through it all the way to Mr. McBain's barn. I could see the start of an informal trail, created by the feet of passers-by, leading into the grass, and wondered how possible it might be that I could undertake the same journey. I thought, too, about the time the sun had given his special nourishment to Beggarman and his dog, and considered the important differences between his circumstances and Josie's. For one thing, many passers-by had known Beggarman, and when he'd become weak, he'd done so in a busy street, visible to taxi drivers and runners. Any of these people might have drawn the son's attention to his condition and that of his dog. Even more significantly, I remembered what had been happening not long before the son had given his special nourishment to Beggarman. The Cootings machine had been making its awful pollution, obliging even the son to retreat for a time. And it had been during the fresh new era after the dreadful machine had gone away that the son, relieved and full of happiness, had given his special help. I remained for a time in front of the picture frame gate, watching the grass lean one way then the other, wondering what other trails might be hidden within it, and how I might help to rescue Josie from her sickness. But I wasn't yet used to being outdoors alone, and could sense disorientation starting to set in. So I turned from the fields and made my way back to the house. Dr. Ryan visited frequently during this period, and Josie spent long stretches of the day asleep. The son would pour in his normal nourishment each day, his pattern often falling across her sleeping form, but there remained no sign of his special help. But here again, the son was perhaps correct to wait, for Josie did become gradually stronger, until eventually she was able to sit up in bed. She'd been warned by Dr. Ryan not to resume her oblong lessons, so there now came the days when, propped up on her pillows, she created many pictures with her sharp pencils and sketchpad. Each time she finished a picture, or decided to abandon one, she'd tear it out and toss it into the air, allowing it to float down onto the rug, and it became my job to gather these sheets together into ordered piles. As Dr. Ryan came less, Rick visited more. Melania, housekeeper, had always been wary of Rick. But even she could see how much his visits raised Josie's spirits. So she allowed the visits, though insisting they last no more than 30 minutes. The first afternoon Rick was shown up to the bedroom, I started to leave in order to give privacy. But Melania, housekeeper, stopped me on the landing, whispering,
"No, AF, you stay in there. Make sure no hanky-panky."
So it became normal for me to remain during Rick's visits, even though he sometimes looked towards me with go-away eyes and almost never addressed me, even to say hello or goodbye. Had Josie also made such go-away signals, I wouldn't have remained, even after Melania, housekeeper's instruction. But Josie seemed happy about my presence. I even thought she took comfort from it, though she never included me in their conversations. I did my best to give privacy by remaining on the button couch and fixing my gaze over the fields. I couldn't help hearing what was being said behind me, and though I sometimes thought I shouldn't listen, I remembered it was my duty to learn as much about Josie as possible, and that by listening in this way, I might gather fresh observations otherwise unavailable to me. Rick's visits to the bedroom during this time fell into three phases. In the first phase, he'd glance around nervously when he arrived, and behave throughout the 30 minutes as though any careless movement he made might damage the furniture. It was in this phase he took up the habit of seating himself on the floor just in front of the modern wardrobe, resting his back against its doors. From the button couch, I could see the reflections in the window, and with Rick in this position, and Josie sitting up in bed, they looked almost as though they were seated side by side, except with Josie at a higher level. Throughout this first phase, there was a gentle atmosphere, and the 30 minutes often passed with nothing much of substance being said. The children would often share memories from when they were younger,
and make jokes about them. It would take only a word or a single reference to trigger such a memory, and then they'd become immersed in it. They conversed at such moments in a speech that was like a code, making me wonder if this was on account of my presence in the room. But I quickly understood it had simply to do with their familiarity with each other's lives, and that there was no intention to exclude my understanding. Josie didn't at first draw pictures while hosting Rick, but as they became more relaxed, she often sketched throughout the entire 30 minutes, tearing out sheets as she went and allowing them to float down to where he was sitting. And this was how, quite innocently at first, the bubble game began. The coming of the bubble game marked the start of the next phase of Rick's visits. It's possible that the bubble game was one they'd invented a long time earlier in their childhoods. Certainly when the game started this time round, there'd been no need for instructions between them. Josie had simply begun to throw down her sketches to Rick, even as they continued their rambling conversations. Until at one point he'd scrutinized a picture and said, "Okay, is this now the bubble game?"
"If you want.
Just if you want, Ricky."
"I don't have a pencil. Throw me one of the dark ones."
"I need all the dark ones here. Who's the artist here anyway?"
"How can I do the bubbles if you won't even lend me a pencil?"
Even with my back to them, it wasn't hard to guess the outline of this game. And once Rick left at the end of each half hour, I was able to observe the pages as I gathered them from the floor. And so it was I began to appreciate the growing importance this game had for them both. Josie's sketches were skillful, usually showing one, two, or occasionally three people together, their heads drawn deliberately too large for their bodies. During those earlier visits, the faces tended always to be kind and were sketched only with black, sharp pencil, while their shoulders and bodies, like the surroundings, had been done with color, sharp pencils. In each picture, Josie left an empty bubble hovering above one head or the other, sometimes two bubbles over two heads, for Rick to fill with written words. I understood quickly that even when the faces didn't resemble Rick or Josie, within the world of this game, it was possible for all sorts of picture girls to stand for Josie and picture boys for Rick. Similarly, other figures could stand for others in Josie's life, the mother, say, or children from the interaction meeting, as well as others I'd not yet encountered. Although for me it was difficult to understand who many faces stood for, Rick appeared to have no such problem. He never asked for clarification concerning the drawings that fluttered down to him, and would write his words into the bubbles without any hesitation. I soon understood that the words Rick wrote inside the bubbles represented the thoughts, sometimes the speech, of the picture people, and that as such his task carried some danger. From the start, I worried that something Josie drew or something Rick wrote would bring tension. But during this phase, the bubble game seemed to result only in enjoyment and reminiscences, and I'd see them reflected in the glass, laughing and pointing forefingers at each other. Had they concentrated solely on their game as they first played it, if they'd kept their conversation focused just on the pictures, perhaps the tensions wouldn't have leaked in. But as Josie continued to sketch and Rick to fill the bubbles, they began to converse about topics unrelated to the pictures. One sunny afternoon, with the sun's pattern touching Rick's feet where he sat against the modern wardrobe, Josie said,
"You know, Ricky, I'm wondering if you're getting jealous, the way you always keep asking about this portrait."
"I don't understand. You mean you're doing an actual portrait of me up there?"
"No, Ricky. I mean the way you keep bringing up my portrait. The one this guy's doing of me up in the city."
"Oh, that. Well, I did once mention it, I suppose. That's hardly bringing it up all the time."
"You keep bringing it up. Twice just yesterday."
Rick's writing hand paused, but he didn't look up.
"I suppose I'm curious. But how can anyone get jealous about your portrait getting done?
Seems dumb, but you definitely sound that way.
For the next few moments, they were silent, getting on with their respective tasks. Then Rick said,
I wouldn't say I'm jealous. I'm concerned. This guy, this artist person. Everything you say about him sounds, well, creepy.
He's just doing my portrait is all. He's always respectful, always anxious not to tire me out.
He never sounds right. You say I keep bringing this up. Well, that's because each time I do, you say something else to make me think, oh my God, this is getting creepy.
What's creepy about it?
For one thing, you've been to his studio, what, 4 times? But he never shows you anything. No rough sketches, nothing. All he seems to do is take photos up close. This piece of you, that piece of you. Is that what artists really do?
He prefers photos because that way I don't get exhausted sitting still for hours in the old-fashioned way. This way I'm only in there 20 minutes tops each time. He takes the photos he needs stage by stage. And Mom's always there. Look, would my mom hire some pervert to do my portrait?
Rick didn't respond. Then Josie went on.
I think it is some kind of jealousy, Ricky. But you know what? I don't mind. Shows you've got the right attitude. You're being protective. Shows you're thinking about our plan. So don't worry.
I'm not worried. This is such a ridiculous accusation.
It's not an accusation. I'm not saying it's, like, sexual or anything. What I'm saying is that this portrait, it's just part of the big world out there, and you're worried it could get in our way. When I say you might be jealous, I'm just meaning in that sense.
Fair enough.
Their plan, though frequently mentioned, was rarely discussed in detail. Nevertheless, it was during this, still gentle, phase of the visits that I began to gather together their various remarks about it into a coherent observation. I came to understand that the plan wasn't anything they'd built carefully, but more a vague wish connected to their future. I realized, too, the significance of this plan for my own aims, that as the future unfolded, even if the mother, Melania housekeeper, and I could remain near her at all times, without the plan, Josie might still not keep away loneliness. There then came a point when the bubble game stopped bringing laughter and brought instead fear and uncertainty. In my mind today, this marks the third and last phase of those visits Rick made at that time. It's hard now to establish which of them first altered the mood. In the earlier phases, Josie's sketches were often created purposefully to bring back amusing or happy incidents they'd shared in the past. This was one reason Rick was able to fill the bubbles quickly and with little hesitation. But there now came a change in Rick's reactions when the sheets floated down to him. Increasingly, he would stare at them for long moments, sigh or frown. Then when he wrote his words, he'd do so slowly and with more concentration, often not replying to anything Josie said until he'd finished. And Josie's responses, once Rick had passed the sheets back up to her, became hard to predict. She might study a sheet with blank eyes before placing it amidst her bedclothes without comment. Or sometimes she'd flick a completed sheet back onto the floor, this time to a spot beyond Rick's reach. Every now and then, the mood might return to the way it was before, and they'd laugh or argue in a friendly way. But increasingly, either Josie's picture or Rick's words would cause an unkind exchange. Even so, a comfortable atmosphere would usually have returned by the time Melania housekeeper called up the end of the 30 minutes. Once, Rick reached forward and picked up a sheet, regarded it carefully, then put down his sharp pencil. He went on looking at the picture for some time, till Josie, noticing from the bed, stopped her sketching.
Something up, Ricky?
Hmm. I was just wondering what these were supposed to be.
What do they look like?
These folks surrounding her. Am I to assume they're aliens? It almost looks like, instead of a head, they have, well, a giant eyeball. I'm sorry if I have this all wrong.
You haven't got it all wrong.
There was a coldness in her voice, and also a small fear.
Well, at least not really. They're not aliens. They're just what they are.
All right. They're an eyeball tribe. But what's rather troubling is the way they're all staring at her.
What's troubling about it?
The silence continued behind me, and in the window reflections, I saw Rick continuing to stare at the sheet.
So what's troubling about it? Josie asked again.
I'm not sure. This is an extra-large bubble you've made for her, too. I'm not sure what I should write.
Write whatever you think she's thinking. No different from the others.
There was another silence. The sun on the glass made it hard to see the reflections, and I was tempted to turn around, even though this might reduce privacy. But before I could, Rick said,
"Their eyes are really quite creepy. And what's even creepier, it looks like she wants them to keep staring at her."
That's sicko, Rick. Why would she want something like that?
I don't know. You tell me.
How can I tell you?
Josie's voice was now annoyed.
Whose job is it to do the bubbles?
She's half smiling, like she's pleased on the inside.
No, Ricky, that's wrong. That's just sick.
I'm sorry. I must be misinterpreting.
Misinterpreting's right. So hurry up and do her bubble. The next one's here, nearly finished. Rick, you there?
Perhaps I might pass on this one.
Oh, come on!
The sun had retreated now, and I could see Rick in the glass, tossing the sheet gently onto the floor to join the untidy pile accumulating closer to Josie's bed.
I'm disappointed, Rick.
Then don't draw pictures like that one.
There was another silence. I could see Josie on the bed, pretending to be absorbed in her next sketch. I could no longer see Rick very well in the reflection, but I knew he'd remained quite still against the modern wardrobe and was staring past me out of the rear window. After Rick's visits finished, Josie would usually be tired and toss her sharp pencils, sketch pad, and loose pages onto the floor, turn onto her front and rest. At these moments, I'd come off the button couch to pick up the many items by now scattered over the floor, and I'd then have the chance to see what they'd been discussing during the visit. Josie, even with her cheek pressed into the pillow, wouldn't actually be asleep, and often she'd continue to make remarks with her eyes closed. So she was fully aware I was observing the pictures as I gathered them, and clearly didn't mind. In fact, it's likely it was her wish that I look at each and every one of them. Once, while performing this tidying, I happened to pick up a sheet, and though I glanced at it only fleetingly, established straight away that the two main faces in the picture were supposed to represent Missy and the long-armed girl from the interaction meeting. There were, of course, various inaccuracies, but Josie's intention was obvious. The sisters were at the front of the picture, with unkind expressions, while other less finished faces crowded around them. And although there were no furniture details, I knew the setting was the open plan. Had it not been for a large bubble above it, it would have been easy not to notice the small, featureless creature squeezed into the gap between the sisters. In contrast to the picture Missy and the picture long-armed girl, this creature lacked the usual human features, such as face, shoulders, arms, and resembled more one of the water blobs that formed on the surface of the island near the sink. In fact, if not for the bubble above it, a passerby might not even have guessed this shape was intended to represent a person at all. The sisters were ignoring the water blob person completely, despite the person's closeness.
Inside the bubble, Rick had written, "The smart kids think I have no shape, but I do. I'm just keeping it hidden. Because who wants them to see?" Although I only glimpsed this picture for a second, Josie knew I'd taken it in. And she said from the bed in a sleepy voice, "Don't you think that's a weird thing for him to write?" When I gave a small laugh and carried on tidying, she went on, "Do you suppose he thinks I meant that to be him? The little guy between the two nasties? Do you suppose that's why he filled the bubble that way?" "It's possible." "But you don't think so, do you, Clara?" Then she said, "Clara, you listening? Come on, can we have a comment here?" "It's perhaps more likely he assumed the small person was Josie." She said nothing else while I ordered the various sheets into piles and placed them with the previous ones in a space beneath the dressing table. I thought she'd fallen asleep when she said suddenly, "What makes you say that?" "It's only an estimate. I think that Rick thought the small person was Josie. And I believe Rick was trying to be kind."
"Kind? Why is that being kind?"
"I believe Rick worries about Josie. How she sometimes appears to change in different situations. But in this picture, Rick is being kind. Because he's suggesting Josie is being clever to protect herself and isn't really changing."
"So what if I sometimes want to act different? Who wants to be the same all the time? The trouble with Rick is he always gets accusing when I'm any way he doesn't like. It's because he wants me to stay the way I was when we were small kids.
I don't really think that's what Rick wishes."
"Then what's all this? All this no-shape hiding stuff? I don't see what's kind about it."
"That's Rick's problem. He doesn't want to grow up. At least, his mother doesn't want him to, and he goes along with it. The idea is he lives with his mom forever and ever. How's that going to help our plan? Anytime I show any sign of trying to grow up, he gets sulky."
I said nothing to this, and Josie continued to lie there with her eyes closed. She did fall asleep then. But just before she did, she said quietly, "Maybe. Maybe he did mean it to be kind." I wondered if Josie would bring up this particular picture and the words inside the bubble during Rick's next visit. But she didn't, and I realized there was a kind of rule between them not to talk directly about any of the pictures or bubble words once they'd been completed. Perhaps such an understanding was necessary in allowing them to draw and write freely. Even so, as I have said, I considered from the start that their bubble game was filled with danger. And it was what brought about the sudden end to Rick's 30-minute visits. It was a rainy afternoon, but the sun's pattern still came faintly into the bedroom. There'd been around then a run of fairly relaxed visits, and the mood that day had also been quite comfortable. Then 12 minutes into the visit, they were again playing the bubble game. Josie said from the bed, "What's going on down there? Haven't you finished yet?"
"I'm still thinking."
"Ricky, the idea is you don't think. You write down the first thing that comes to you."
"Fair enough. But this one requires more thought."
"Why? What's different about it? Hurry it up. I've nearly finished this next one." In the window reflections, I could see Rick at his usual place on the floor, knees drawn up so that he could rest the picture on them, both hands down at his sides. He was staring at the picture before him with a puzzled expression. After a while, without pausing from her drawing, Josie said,
"You know, I always meant to ask, why is it your mom won't drive anymore? You still have that car, right?"
"No one started it up in years. But yeah, it's still in the garage. Maybe once I get my license, I'll get it checked over."
"Is it like she's afraid of accidents?"
"Josie, we've talked about this already."
"Yeah, but I don't remember. Is it because she got too scared?"
"Something like that."
My mom, she's the reverse. Drives way too fast.
When Rick didn't respond, she asked,
Ricky, you still haven't filled that in?
I'll get there. Just give me a moment.
Not driving's one thing, but doesn't your mom mind not having friends?
She has friends. That Mrs. Rivers comes all the time. And she's friends with your mom, isn't she?
That's not really what I mean. Anyone can have one or two individual friends, but your mom, she doesn't have society.
My mom doesn't have so many friends either, but she does have society.
Society? That sounds rather quaint. What's it mean?
It means you walk into a store or get into a taxi and people take you seriously, treat you well. Having society, important, right?
Look, Josie, you know my mother's not always so well. It's not as if she'd made a decision about it.
But she does make decisions, right? One thing, she made a decision about you, back whenever.
I don't know why we're talking about this.
You know what I think, Ricky? Stop me if this is unfair. I think your mom never went ahead with you because she wanted to keep you for herself, and now it's too late.
I don't see why we're talking about this. And what does it matter? Who wants this society anyway? None of it needs to get in the way of anything.
It all gets in the way, Ricky. Gets in the way of our plan, for one thing.
Look, I'm doing my best.
But you're not doing your best, Ricky. You keep talking about our plan. But what really are you doing? Each day goes by, we get older, stuff keeps coming up. I'm doing all I can, but not you, Rick.
What am I not doing I should be doing? Going to more of your interaction meetings?
You could at least try more. You could do like we said, study harder. Try for Atlas Brookings.
What's the point in talking about Atlas Brookings? I don't even have an outside chance.
Of course you've got a chance, Ricky. You're smart. Even my mom says you stand a chance.
A theoretical chance. Atlas Brookings may make a big thing of it, but it's less than 2%. That's all. Their intake of unlifteds is less than 2%.
But you're smarter than any of the other unlifteds trying to get in. So why won't you go for it? I'll tell you. It's because your mom wants you to stay with her forever. She doesn't want you going out there and turning into a real adult. Hey, are you still not finished down there? The next one's ready.
Rick was silent, gazing at the picture. Josie, despite her announcement, continued to add to her picture.
Anyway, she went on. How's this going to work? Our plan, I mean. How's it going to work if I've got society and you haven't? My mom drives too fast, but at least she's got courage. It goes wrong with Sal, but even after that, she finds the courage to go ahead with me all over again. That takes courage, right?
Rick suddenly leaned forward and started to write on the picture. He often used a magazine to press on, but this time I could see the page was directly against his thigh and starting to crinkle. But he went on writing quickly, then stood up, dropping his sharp pencil to the floor. Rather than hand the picture to Josie, he tossed it towards the bed, making it land on the duvet in front of her. He then stepped back till he was near the door, all the time watching her with large eyes that were both angry and fearful. Josie turned to him in surprise. Then she put down her own sharp pencil and reached forward for the sheet. For a long moment, she looked at it with blank eyes, while Rick kept watching from the door.
I can't believe you'd write this, she said finally. Why would you do this?
I turned around on the button couch, estimating the tension had reached a level that could no longer justify complete privacy. Perhaps Rick had forgotten about my presence, because my turning round appeared to startle him. His gaze came to me for a second, still filled with fear and anger. Then he strode out of the room without a word. We listened to his steps going down the stairs. Once the front door noise came, Josie yawned, threw everything off the bed and lay down on her front, as though the visit had ended like any other.
"He can be so exhausting sometimes," she said into her pillow.
I came off the button couch and began to tidy the room. Josie's eyes stayed closed, and she said nothing more. But I could tell she hadn't fallen asleep. As I went on tidying, I naturally glanced at the sheet that had caused the tension. As expected, the picture showed versions of Josie and Rick. There were many inaccuracies, but also enough resemblances to leave no doubt about the intended identities. Picture Josie and picture Rick appear to be floating in the sky. The trees, roads, and houses far below reduced to miniature sizes. Behind them, in one section of sky, were seven birds flying in formation. Picture Josie was holding up with two hands a much larger bird, offering it as a special gift to picture Rick. Picture Josie had a large smile, and picture Rick a look of thrilled amazement. There was no bubble for picture Rick. The only one was for picture Josie's thoughts. And inside it, Rick had written, "I wish I could go out and walk and run and skateboard and swim in lakes, but I can't because my mother has courage. So instead I get to stay in bed and be sick. I'm glad about this. I really am." I added this picture to the collection I was gathering in my hands, making sure it wasn't near the top. Josie remained quiet and still, her eyes closed, but I knew she wasn't asleep. In the days before Morgan's Falls, I would perhaps have spoken to her at this point, and Josie would have responded with honesty. But the mood between us was different now, and so I decided to say nothing. I went to the dressing table, reached down and placed this latest pile beside the others in the space underneath. Rick didn't come back the next day or the day after. But when Melania, housekeeper, asked, "Where boy go? Get sick?" Josie just shrugged and said nothing. As the days continued, and there was still no visit from Rick, Josie grew more quiet, and her signals became keep-away ones. She still continued with her drawings in bed. But without Rick and the bubble game, her enthusiasm would quickly drain away, and often she'd toss unfinished pictures onto the floor, stretch out on the bed, and stare at the ceiling. One afternoon when she'd been staring in this way, I said to her, "If you liked, Josie, we could play the bubble game. If Josie would draw the pictures, I'd do my best to think of suitable words." She went on staring up at the air. Then she turned and said, "Look, that's just not going to work. I don't mind you listening in, but there's no way you could do that instead of Rick. No way at all."
"I see. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have suggested."
"No, you shouldn't have."
As more days passed without a Rick visit, Josie grew lethargic, and I was concerned she was also growing weak again. It occurred to me this was the ideal time for the son to send his special help, and whenever his pattern in the bedroom altered suddenly, or when he burst out in the sky following an overcast spell, I'd watch with particular keenness. But though he continued unfailingly to send his normal nourishment, his special help didn't come. One morning I returned to the bedroom after taking down her breakfast tray and found her propped up on her pillows, sketching busily with something like her old enthusiasm. She also had a serious expression I'd not seen before while working on a picture. And when I tried to make conversation, she didn't reply. Once, as I was tidying the room and came near the bed, she adjusted her posture to prevent me glimpsing any part of her sheet. After a time, she tore out the page, screwed it into a tight ball, and dropped it into a crevice in her duvet between herself and the wall. She then began a fresh drawing, her eyes large and tense. I sat on the button couch, this time facing towards her so she would know I was ready to converse whenever she wished to do so. After almost an hour, she put down her sharp pencil and stared at her picture for some time.
"Clara? See down there, bottom left drawer? Could you get me an envelope? One of the large padded ones?"
As I was crouching down by the drawer, I saw Josie raise her sharp pencil again, and from its movements, I knew she was no longer drawing, but writing words. Then she folded the picture down the middle, placing a blank sheet between the halves to prevent smudging, took the padded envelope from me, and carefully slid the picture inside. Peeling off the thin paper tape, she sealed the envelope, pressing its edge to make sure.
"Glad that's done," she said, turning the envelope in her hands as though it brought her comfort to do so.
But as I began to move away from the bed, she suddenly held it towards me.
"Would you put this in the same drawer you found the envelope, lower left?"
"Of course." I took it from her, but didn't go immediately to the drawer. Instead, I stood in the middle of the room, holding the envelope and looked at her. "I wonder if this picture is a special gift from Josie to Rick."
"What makes you say that?"
"It was just an estimate."
"Well, your estimate's right. I wanted it to be for Rick, for when he next comes here."
There was a silence while she watched me, and I was uncertain if she was simply impatient for me to place the envelope in the drawer as she'd requested, or if she was waiting for me to say something more about Rick and his visits. "In the end," I said, "perhaps he'll come again soon."
"Perhaps he will. No sign of it, though."
"I think Rick will be pleased to see the picture. He'll see Josie took special care with it."
"I didn't take special care."
She flashed angry eyes.
"I got bored and drew another picture, that's all. But you're right. It's for Rick. Problem is, he'd have to come here to get it, and he doesn't come anymore."
She went on staring at me. I remained standing in the middle of the room.
"Josie," I said after a while, "if you like, I could take the drawing to him."
Her eyes became surprised and also excited.
"You mean you'll take it over to him? To his house?"
"Yes. It's only the neighbor house after all.
I guess it wouldn't be so weird you taking this to him. Other people's AFs go on errands all the time, right?"
"I'd be happy to go. I believe I'll be able to find the correct trail to his house."
"And would you do it today? Before lunch?"
"Whenever Josie wishes. If you like, I could take it to him now, right away. You think that's a good idea?"
I raised the padded envelope slightly. "I'd very much like to take Josie's picture to Rick. It would be good for me to explore the outside. And if Rick receives this special picture, he may forgive Josie and be her best friend again."
"What do you mean, forgive? It's for me to forgive him. That's really dumb, Clara. I don't think I want you to take this to him now."
"I'm sorry. It's my error. I don't understand yet the rules about forgiveness. Even so, I think it will be best to take him the picture. I think he'd like it."
Her anger faded from her face.
"Okay, go ahead, take it."
Then, as I turned, she added quietly,
"You're probably right. I guess it is him who needs to forgive me.
I'll take it to him and we can see what he does."
"Okay."
Then she smiled.
"If he's rude about it, you just tear it up, right?"
Her smile was almost like the smiles from before Morgan's Falls. I smiled too then and said, "I hope that won't be necessary." She fell back onto her pillow in a jokey way.
"Okay, go. I need a rest now."
But as I was leaving the bedroom, the padded envelope held closely to me, she said suddenly,
"Hey, Clara?"
"Yes?"
"It must be dull, right? Living here with a sick kid?"
She was still smiling, but I saw fear beneath the smile.
"It's never dull to be with Josie." You waited all that time for me in the store. I bet you're wishing now you'd gone with some other kid. I've never wished such a thing. It was my wish to be Josie's AF, and the wish came true.
Yeah, but...
She made a small laughing sound full of sadness. But that was before you got here. I promised it would be great. I'm very happy here. I have no wish other than to be Josie's AF. If I get better, we can go outside together all the time. We could go to the city, see my dad. Maybe he could take us to the other cities. Those are possibilities for the future. But Josie must know, I couldn't have a better home than this one, or a better child than Josie. I'm so glad I waited. That manager allowed me to wait. Josie thought about this. Then when she smiled again, it was full of kindness, with no fear behind it.
So we're friends, right? Best friends?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. So remember, don't take any shit from Rick.
I smiled too then, and held up the padded envelope to show I would take good care of it. Melania, housekeeper, expressed no objection to my going alone on an errand to Rick's house. Nevertheless, as I crossed the loose stones towards the picture frame gate, she remained at the front door watching me. And only as I stepped into the first field did she go back inside. I followed the informal trail and the ground soon became hard to predict, a soft step often coming straight after a hard one. The grass came up to my shoulders, and a fear entered my mind that I would lose my bearings. But this part of the field had been divided into orderly boxes, so that as I passed from one box into the next, I was able to see clearly those lined up ahead of me. Less helpful was the way the grass frequently sprang across me from one side or the other. But even this I quickly learned to control by holding out an arm. If I'd had both arms free, I'd have made even faster progress, but of course I was holding Josie's envelope in one hand and couldn't risk harming it. Then the tall grass finished around me, and I was standing in front of Rick's house. While viewing from a distance, I'd already estimated that Rick's house wasn't as high rank as Josie's. Now I could see that many of its white paint boards had become gray, even brown in some places, and three of the windows were dark rectangles with no curtains or blinds within them. I went up a stairway of planks, each one bending under my tread, then onto a platform constructed from more such planks, this time with gaps between them through which I could see the muddy ground below. Near the house front door, pushed over to one side, was a refrigerator, its back fully exposed to passers-by. And I saw how spiders had made their homes within the complicated metal bracing. I'd paused to observe their delicate cobwebs when the front door opened, though I hadn't pressed any button, and Rick came out onto the platform.
"Excuse me," I said quickly,